I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
We're back. Benny Walker, Ghost. Haven't heard that song for a while, and it's good to be hearing that hook again and being back with Tell Me Your Tales podcast. Thanks for joining me again. Thanks for downloading the show. If you're new to Tell Me Your Tales, this is the podcast that I did before hooked up with Brad and Julian for the Road to Berlin, and then Inside Running podcast kind of evolved from that. So we're kind of back to the original location here. It's not so much an interview. It's more of just a conversation with some people that I find interesting or inspiring or wise in one way or another, and we just have a bit of a chat, probably more of a two-way conversation, and we just record it and produce it, I guess, rather than going in with the goal to get some kind of content to share to the listeners. So I really hope you enjoy it. If you haven't listened to any of the shows before, definitely go back and I think there's maybe 60, 65 episodes that we recorded before I kind of put this on a pause a bit. And yeah, some good stories, some good conversations in there as well. Thought it was fitting to get Andy on for the first show back, considering he was the first person that I ever recorded an interview with Tell Me Your Tales with, and that kind of first leap of faith into this podcasting world. And it was good to hear about some of his views at the moment about the running culture here in Australia and overseas, and what's up with his own running, and the kind of documentaries he's watching and the podcast he's listening to and all those kind of things, which is always good to keep informed like that as well. And for me, it was good to just have a conversation with someone again without you see mates and stuff and you do that old direct messenger, or you go out for lunch with somebody, but there's always so many distractions. The kind of phone's always on the table, and sometimes when you're doing interviews for Inside Running, you've got to try and get to certain points, whereas I enjoy this format because it's kind of pretty genuine and it's just two people having a conversation, and sometimes I think we don't do that enough. So I'm doing this just as much for myself to be able to connect with people and have some authentic kind of deeper conversations as well. So that's one of the goals for the show as well. I just said as well about 38 times in the space of that last 30 seconds. But anyway, if you like what I do, could you please share it on social media? It would be good to see that people are listening again. I think towards the end of Tell Me Your Tales, it was about 4,500 downloads a week. So if some of you legends are out there and you can tag Andy and I in some Instagram stories to say you're listening again, or titles on Strava, it's pretty easy just to bang that TMYT in a title or anything, on the other socials, Twitter, I'm pretty active as well. And Facebook, probably don't use Facebook too much at the moment, but yeah, you know where I am. You can find me in any of those spots. If you've got any ideas about people to have some conversations with, remembering that I'm, you know, talking to some pretty elite level athletes over on Inside Running, you can find me at bradytrailfull@gmail.com. All the information's there. And yeah, I think that's all I needed to say. Enjoy this conversation. Back again with Andy Allison. Thanks, can't complain. Thanks for doing this.
Pleasure.
Just jogging this morning, I'm like, you know what, should just kick this up, get a bit more positivity back with Tell Me Your Tales instead of dealing with a few grumpy guys here and there.
give
the people what they want.
Yeah. I've had a few people asking about Tell Me Your Tales when it was coming back. I've been looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, I'll, because it's kind of like, don't really want to bring it back in a, like, probably that elitist running sense is what we're trying to hit with the Inside Running. So I don't want to be competing or using kind of the interviews that I could use on that platform, but yeah. I reckon like much more just these chilled out conversations and like almost hitting up people that had on the like Tell Me Your Tales like in the first round and just kind of go back and see what they're all up to kind of thing.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, not sure yet. As I said, it was kind of just woke up this morning. I was like, yeah, should do this today. I'll see if Andy's available.
Worked out well.
We'll talk it all about anyway, mate. Just keep it real chilled and go from there. You got to be anywhere?
Nope.
Beautiful. I might chuck this recording gear on, hey?
Okay, let's do it.
You know what it's like, mate. You've been here before.
I sure have, yeah.
All right. Andy Allison, Tell Me Your Tales is back. Welcome. Wouldn't have it with anybody else. The first episode, first ever recording. I think you've been on the show two or three times. Sick of getting people hitting me up on Twitter asking when we're catching up with you again, and here we are.
Mate, it's great to be back. It was really exciting to get your message this afternoon or early this morning, seeing if I was free, so yeah, glad it's worked out.
Yeah, it was pretty erratic, as I said. I was just kind of like running around this morning thinking, oh, this would be good. I'll just get this back going and talk to someone with a bit of positivity and see what he's up to and get his thoughts on life and see where it takes us.
Oh, very good. Great to be back on.
What have you been doing? What's today had in plan for you so far?
Yeah, good day today. I got up and had a coffee as normal. I was going to go for my run because I tend to, on my running days now, I tend to go out first thing, but I wasn't quite feeling it. I had a pretty heavy strength workout yesterday and a hard session on the bike, and so I thought I might do some yoga. So I thought I'd start getting back into yoga again because I'm having a few issues with my dodgy hip and just mobility and everything like that. It doesn't affect me running, but just in everyday life it does. So I thought I'll do some yoga again. So I did half an hour of yoga, had some breakfast, did some housework, did a few hours of uni work, and then went for a beautiful trail run, and then had some lunch, and now I'm here.
Yeah, right. So let's fill the listeners in. Where you're up to with your running? What's the latest with the injury?
Well, it's been I was just having a scroll back to see when we last chatted, and it was December 2017, I think we last chatted.
Oh, really? A whole year?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be right.
That's yeah, crazy. So we were there, and I think I maybe I'd been diagnosed back then with all the issues with the reds and like the relative energy deficiency syndrome and the sacral fractures and the osteopenia and all that kind of stuff. I think that probably happened around that time, I reckon. Or pretty close to it, I think. So I had about a year of, well, not running really. I had I was made to put on a heap of weight to sort of offset the energy deficiency syndrome, which is sort of, I've seen so many people with it since, and I've heard about it, like Dave McNeil in your last chat week. Had it.
Dane Verway put a blog on it. Did you read that on Run Culture?
Yeah, read Dane's blog on it. Then I was listening to you chat with Mario Frioli this morning, and he had a version of it as well. And yeah, so it's actually pretty common, just not as well diagnosed in male athletes. I think it was more commonly just thought of as a female thing, but yeah, it's definitely out there with the men as well. I didn't have the eating disorder side of it. I just underestimated how much fuel I was needing for the amount of energy I was putting out. So, yeah, that was, yeah, it was probably 8 or 9 months there where I wasn't really allowed to do much at all. About 3 or 4 months I wasn't allowed to do anything but just sort of walk a little bit. So that tied in sort of with, I started up university last year, so I'm studying a Bachelor of Education to be a primary school teacher, so that's been a big change in my life. And that came at a really good time because it gave me something else to focus on because I wasn't allowed to run or walk or do anything for a few months, and all, I had to eat like I was training full time. So that was a really challenging start to last year.
How'd you go with that eating?
I had to pretty much, it wasn't what I was eating. Everything I was eating was fine. So, you know, the vegan diet wasn't the issue. It was just that I just wasn't getting enough of it. And to offset or, you know, reverse the red stuff, I just had to pretty much eat. I had like 5 or 6 protein shakes a day on top of my normal meals. So I was pretty much eating every couple of hours. It was just, it was awful. Yeah. Like, you know, because I wasn't that hungry because I wasn't exercising. I wasn't burning calories. And like, you know, just before I went to bed, I'd have to check my app because I was having to document everything in the Monash app to see, you know, what I'd eaten that day and how many calories there were and that kind of stuff. And so I'd get to 10 o'clock at night and realize I was still 600 calories short, and I'd have to go and have a big protein shake and a couple of pieces of toast with peanut butter on it. And I just felt like a bit of a slob for a while there.
Yeah, just throwing stuff down. I've been at a similar, I don't think was to the same extreme, but just same thing, like my dietitian just saying, do not let your weight drop under 58. Like, so just constantly on the scales, trying to be heavier than 58, which is harder said than done. Like, you feel like you're just overeating all the time and it's not enjoyable at all.
Yeah, no. And that was a shame because I love eating and I love food and I love cooking and all that kind of stuff, but it became a chore. Like, eating became a real chore, having to watch what I was eating or how much I was eating. But it seemed to work because I got back to running in maybe June or July that year. Yeah, last year, I think I got back to running after a heap of rehab, so a lot of swimming and a lot of gym work and a lot of work on the bike and a pretty big prehab. And I went through the walk-run protocol, you know, like probably only every 2 or 3 days I was walking or running, like walk runs, like 1 minute on, 4 minutes off, that kind of stuff. And I did that for a month or two and then got back to 20-minute jogs. I think I was overseas at the time. We were in Scotland and then Greece. And so I was running every 2 or 3 days there for like 20 or 30 minutes. And it felt hard because I got up to about 72 kilos.
Yeah, and right. What were you before you stopped running?
My last race, which was Gold Coast in 2017, I was 59 kilos.
Whoa, yeah,
and,
right.
Yeah, which is too little. Like, I look back at the photos of me there and I just look terrible. I look so skinny. But I just didn't realise, because when you're in it, you don't look at yourself in the mirror that much. You don't realise how much you've lost, or because, you know, you get to a start line of a race like that and pretty much everybody's skinny except for, you know, you've got somebody like Dion, who I was running with, who's, you know, just a muscle man. Like, you know, apart from him, you know, we all look pretty scrawny and ordinary. So I didn't feel like I was that out of the ordinary, but looking back now, I can see it wasn't healthy at all.
Yeah, it's a trap because you surround yourself with those people all the time. Like, I could go through all the people I follow on Instagram and most of them are marathon runners, and that becomes the normal for me to look at those people and kind of judge yourself on them.
Yep, totally. So that was a bit of an adjustment, and carrying that extra weight around, I mean, I'm not going to be weightist or anything about but it did feel challenging because, you know, you're used to getting around. I think I was probably 60 or 61 when I stopped running back in December. So it was still, you know, 11 or 12 kilos of extra weight. And I was enjoying the jogs a little bit. It never felt really comfortable. But I just kept ticking away at it. And then we got back to about 50 Ks a week over like a 2 or 3 month period, I think, and started adding in like some threshold sessions, you know, like a 10-minute warm up and a 20-minute block at a certain sort of effort or pace, and then a cool down. But that never felt good. Like, I never felt like I was running naturally, and Like, you know, the first session I was only averaging like 4:15s for that, what was like a threshold session, and I felt like I was running 3:30s. Like, it just felt terrible. Really unnatural, and it all started to become a bit of a chore. Like, I just didn't enjoy getting out the door as much. Like, I was going out and running because I just thought that was what I was meant to do, but I wasn't really enjoying the jogs, and I was having to train by myself a lot because, you know, my smaller jogs and sessions weren't really fitting in with any of my mates down here. And so I just sort of, I got a little bit negative about it. And then with a few other things, like, I mean, running's part of your life, but there's also the balance of everything else that goes with it. And I just don't think I had a very good balance at that time. I was getting used to being a student for the first time in 20 years, you know, and, you know, sitting exams and assessments and the pressure of that. And then my wife Lindsay's work was sort of off the show, so busy, and trying to help her, you know, maintain a decent sort of lifestyle outside of work. And then a few personal issues that we had going on at the time. And then we had sick pets who were, you know, sort of like our family. And we had a lot going on. And at some stage during that, I started getting a lot of pain in my left leg. And running just started feeling really, really awkward again. And we just thought it was all nerve related, like I'd had before. And so we just sort of ran through it. I saw my physio and he was like, oh, I think it'll be okay. I think it'll just settle down. And it wasn't. I started running with a really bad gait and it felt really uncomfortable even to run a few hundred meters. And I kept thinking something wasn't right. And so I went back and saw him again, and I'd already stopped running by that stage. And he had a bit of a feel around in the front of my shin, and he was like, yeah, actually that doesn't feel too good. So I went and had an MRI, and I had a stress fracture in my post tibia. And it was only tiny, it wasn't much, but it was certainly enough to throw the body out. And, you know, when that happened, I knew it was buggered again. It was a similar scenario to last time. I was in for just a quick MRI, and I went in there, and I was in there for ages again. And the guy came out and he goes, oh, we're just going to take a few more images. Don't want to alarm you or anything, but, you know, I reckon we'll just take a few more images and you're right to come back in. And, like, I was already dressed at this stage, and I had to go back in and get undressed and do it again. And, like, he's like, yeah, so, yeah, it looks like there's a stress fracture there. And I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go again.
It's not what you want to hear.
Yeah, I was like, all right. To be honest, I actually knew it.
Yeah,
I was in Adelaide the week. I was in Adelaide the week before, and I'd stopped running already. Lindsay was there for a conference, and I was just riding to the pool and swimming, and that's where we did your
That's right, the coverage of Berlin, wasn't it?
We did the coverage of Berlin from the hotel room there, and I already knew that something wasn't right because I just couldn't walk properly even. Like, it was hurting to walk down to the shops and things like that, and I thought, oh, this is buggered. And so the fact that I stopped a couple of weeks before I saw my physio again probably saved it from being a complete stress fracture, like going all the way through the bone. So, yeah, I had another. I mean, that kind of injury is meant to be like a 6 to 8 week recovery, like pretty short. But I guess due to my issues with my health and all that kind of stuff, maybe my bones aren't, you know, repairing as well as they could be, because it took like even 3 months down the track, it was still sore and I still hadn't tried running yet. And then it was still a little bit sore and I couldn't hop properly, but we thought, oh, we'll give it a shot. We'll see if we can do some walk runs. And I started doing that, and that felt like absolute junk. Like, it just felt terrible. I think I got maybe 2 or 3 sessions into that walk run program and just called my physio and said, mate, this feels like shit. I don't enjoy it. I can't run properly. Like, if you'd seen me running down the street, I was embarrassed by how I looked, because I felt like I was all hitched up and I just couldn't run fluidly at all. And it just felt like it wasn't fun. And the main reason I wanted to get back to running this time around wasn't to compete or anything. It was just to enjoy the process of going for a jog, and I couldn't do it. So I just went, oh, no, I'm out. And he went, okay, well, if you don't want to do it or you're not enjoying it, just stop doing it. And that was about November last year, I think.
Yeah, because we spoke about that on the show, I think, this week. Like, being like locked up and not feeling it is worse than actually being injured in the first place. Like, it's pretty depressing out there when you can't get in your groove.
Yeah, it's like what Brad's going through at the moment. And, you know, in my head I'm telling him, just take a break, mate, because, you know, you're just beating yourself up because you don't enjoy the process. It becomes more stressful and you just add stress onto that. And so I just went, rightio, well, it doesn't feel good. I don't enjoy it. I was starting to really enjoy cross training. Like, I was swimming a fair bit, and I was doing some water running with a mate of mine and doing some hard sessions, and I was enjoying that. And I was back to, like, I could walk twice a day with my dog, and that didn't hurt at all, and I was enjoying being able to do that. And, you know, so I was just like, well, maybe I'm just not meant to run again, you know. It's just one of those things. And I sort of came to terms with that, I think. And we're about to go overseas the next month anyway for a family holiday with my wife's family, and I wanted to be able to walk properly over there, and, you know, not being able to go for a walk around a new city because I was too injured. And we were going to go skiing, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, I could ski, because I hadn't done that since I was a kid, and I was looking forward to that. And so I just went, right, I won't bother running, won't even think about it. And I didn't even think about it. I went to the gym a few times while we were over there and swam a bit and went skiing, and then I got the flu just before we left. We all got the flu, and I came home, and a couple of days later, the Cadbury Marathon was on down here.
Yeah.
And a really good mate of mine, Riley Wolf, was coming down and having a crack at his first proper marathon. And, you know, I put my hand up a long time before saying that I would help him out in any way I could. And so, even though I was so sick, like, it was hard to get out of bed, I went out there and picked him up and got there for a 6 a.m. start and hopped on the cruiser on the bike, and, you know, just passed him drinks when he needed it and some gels, and just kept him company. He had another great mate, Andy Sargent, the two guys behind Tempo Journal and Hunter AR. And so he was keeping him, he was doing all his splits for him, and just like a metronome. It was great. And we just had a chat for a few hours, and while I felt terrible, it was such a great experience to be able to help out other people and, you know, see them achieve running goals. And he ran so well, and it was really great. And we finished that, and I was lying on the grass out at Cadbury just feeling pretty wrecked, and a mate's kid came up to me and said, "Andy, chase me across the oval, race me." And I went, okay. So I jumped up and ran across the oval and came back, and then I said to the boys, "Jesus, that didn't hurt." That was the first time I'd realized, like, I hadn't even thought about running, because I'd totally given up on it. And then I tried hopping, which I hadn't been able to do for probably 6 or 7 months, and I could hop again. I was just like, fuck, this is exciting. And I sort of, from that next day, I went, rightio, well, as soon as I get over this flu, I'm gonna try walk running again. I didn't go back and see my physio or anything, because by this stage, I know my body pretty well, and I was just like, right, well, it feels good, and, you know, I'm not going to do anything stupid. And so I just started on the protocol again. You know, it started off as a one-minute run and a four-minute walk, and I did that every couple of days for a couple of weeks. And by the end of it, it was like a four-minute run and one-minute walk, and I was running nearly a K in those 4 minutes and feeling amazing, like nothing I'd felt for the last year and a half. Like, it just, everything just clicked, and everything felt smooth, and it felt comfortable and enjoyable. It was just like, it was like all the nerves had settled down, like the nervous system in my leg and back had settled, and maybe my head was in the right space for it, and there was no pressure or expectations about what I was going to do, and so everything just felt great again.
Yeah, there's something in that, like, that headspace of just saying, nah, that's it, not even worrying about running for this period of time, and then all of a sudden your body can kind of prepare itself. I don't know, there's got to be some relationship there where you're still unconsciously thinking about it when you have races on or you're trying to push through an injury.
Yeah, well, because there was obviously a lot of nerve stuff going on still, and, you know, that nerve pathway where around the old injury and down through my back just wouldn't quit, and wouldn't even allow me to hop on one leg, you know, late last year. Like, I could hold onto the side of a wall at my physio and couldn't even hop up and down. Like, there was just something in the way, and sometimes it just takes a long time for the nervous system to settle down, and mine just took a long time. And I guess I reckon stress is involved in that as well. And, you know, the fact that I've now had a couple of months off from uni assessments and things like that, and not worrying about running and being in a better headspace mentally as well, you know, I was just able to cope with it a little bit better.
Yeah, definitely something in that. How's uni going, and why school teaching?
Well, uni's great. Like, I had some pretty stressful times, and I went to some pretty dark places last year just because it was so new to me, and I was never a good student. Like,
really? Not that I was. You strike me as a switched on guy. You'd be like a perfect student.
No, I was terrible as a kid.
You're like a rebel at school, giving the teachers trouble.
Absolutely, yeah. I was terrible growing up. Like, it wasn't that I was dumb or anything like that. Like, I could do the work. I just didn't do the work. And so going into this year, I just honestly didn't even know, or last year, I didn't even know what I was going to be able to do. The idea came around, like, when I was, not last year, the year before, my first year back in Tassie, when I was managing some of the junior state teams and going away to nationals with them. And I was away with the junior teams a couple of times, and I just found myself, I just got along so well with the kids and just seemed to have so much fun with them, and they listened to me, and, you know, I sort of understood them, because even though I'm like nearly 40 now, I'm sort of a bit of a kid myself, and maybe I can relate to them a little bit better than some other managers or coaches. And I was like, oh, that was really fun. I really enjoyed it. And then I've got a lot of mates who are primary school teachers as well. And it just seemed like a sort of good lifestyle. And I wanted something challenging to do. And so I sat down with a mate who's a teacher, and we wrote up, because I'm so old, I had to, you know, I can't go through the normal route to get into uni. I had to write like an essay application and show them my sort of life history and all that kind of stuff. And so we did that really late, like January of last year, I think, and just, it was so late. And then, yeah, I got accepted, and so I had a week or so before uni started to get into uni mode. So yeah, it's been really good.
What's it like sitting in classes with like 18-year-olds?
Well, that's the beauty of it. I'm studying
studying online
through UTAS. Yeah, okay. It's only offered in Launceston education, and so there was no way I was moving to Lonnie to study. So it's been really good for me, because, yeah, I mean, I'm a very different person now than I was as a kid. I'm really organised, and I love structure and all that kind of stuff. So I just treat it like a job now. You know, I do it all day, Monday to Friday, and, you know, just tick off all the boxes. And, yeah, I've really enjoyed writing. I always enjoyed writing. And so just being, you know, working out how to write essays and all that kind of stuff's been interesting, but it's turned out really well. Yeah, had a great first year. I think I had like a distinction average over the year, and yeah, it was great.
And is it still like a four-year course?
Yeah, four-year course. So 1 year down, I've just started my second year this year.
Beautiful. What else has been happening in the life of Andy Allison?
Well, that's pretty much it. I've been a bit of a man of leisure of the last couple of months, being on school holidays, so that's been really good, and it's sort of tied in really well because Lindsay's so busy with work. She's doing a lot of on-call work, and she's also finishing off her research project, which she has to do for her fellowship, and so she's been pretty stressed with that and doing that every night after work. And she also, she's chairing a lot of committees and setting up conferences and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a really good balance to, you know, being able to get back into exercise for me and sort of maintain everything at home for her. So, you know, she has a stress-free time outside of work. So that's worked really well for both of us. And I think there's that balance that we have there that works really well, that, you know, I can do all that other stuff to allow her to do what she loves to do. And, you know, while we, you know, I'm not working, so she's sort of the bank, but that works well because we, you know, that extra bit of money, you know, I don't think you can really make up for it with the time. And so I think we've coped quite well on one income and just having a better balance in our life. You know, I'm in a much better headspace because of it as well. And yeah, it's really hard to put a price on that, I think.
Oh, mate, you're talking to the converted. After not being at work for like, I don't know, about 3 weeks, 4 weeks into the school year, 100% agree with you about the whole, like, you know, you don't need that amount of money, and just having all those little things done around the house and actually having your head switched on and not being stressed to the eyeballs is worth way more than that extra $1,000 anyway.
Oh, and I totally, I put that as one of the main things that's allowed me to come back to running and being able to enjoy it, because I don't have that external stress building up or internal stress building up at all. You know, I've got time to maintain the house and walk the dog and cook nice food every night, and so we're eating well and, you know, just looking after each other better.
Yeah, 100%. 100% agree with you. Hey, what was it like down at Run the Bridge on the weekend? Pretty good environment down there. Your video's killing it.
So good. Like, it's my favourite fun run for a number of reasons. I mean, I've run my PB there on a day when I thought I was you know, wasn't going to be able to go to the start line.
I was there. I was just in front of you.
You were there?
Yep.
That was when we did our first...
It was that same day.
The first Tell Me Your Tales interview, yep. So, you know, I got to meet you in person and we had... It was just such a great day and such a great memory and it was such a great course. Like being able to run from point to point, you get to, you know, you get to see the whole city and run over the bridge and into the docks. Like it's just a really awesome event and it's so well pumped up. Like Richard does an amazing job as race director. You know, they've got helicopters flying over, they've got live streams and videos at the finish and commentary. Like it's just so well built up and such an interesting course. And then to have the opportunity to go in the lead car, that video came around by accident actually, because I was in the lead car meant to be the spotter. So we take off following the women, of course, because they're in front of the men because of the battle of the sexes. So the women start, I think it was like 3 minutes 44, which is the difference between the men's and the women's record. They start that far apart and the men chase them down. There's extra money up for grabs for whoever crosses over the line first. And so we're following the lead women, and the car we're in had all this advertising signage over the back of it, so I couldn't actually see out of the car. So I just started putting my phone up on sort of selfie mode so I could actually see where Millie and the girls were at any time and tell the driver to speed up or slow down. I was relaying race splits and moves back to the commentary team who were down at the dock, so that was pretty cool. And then we're getting to the edge of the bridge, like keeping in mind, like normally the men get the women maybe right at the finish, like it's happened like in the last 100 metres or so. And this year they caught them on the bridge and it was incredible to watch. I think I had the video going at that stage where we've seen Millie there at the bottom of the bridge and then Harry's just thumping down the side of the bridge with Robbo in tow. And yeah, I just sort of kept it on. Wasn't really thinking too much about it, but I thought, oh, a few people might like to watch this. Not that I've got huge amounts of following on Instagram, but I started putting it up and then hopped out of the car so I could get a better look at the finish, because I knew we weren't going to be able to take the car to the finish. And you got to see just how fast these guys are going, and from a street level you can see how much effort they're putting in. And you know, when I saw the first two guys come past and I saw Liam come past, and I thought, man, he is absolutely stomping. And I haven't seen him race that aggressively in so long and look so good, so that was great. And then I got to the finish line and I saw like Benny Saint there, so I just thought I'd go over and have a chat to him, and then it just went from there. I just left it on. I wasn't really even thinking about it.
Yeah, it was good because I think nearly everyone you spoke to would kind of already spoken about on the show in some way or another in the last 12 months, so it was kind of for our listeners to be able to see that and identify that, oh, that's that guy that they were talking about there, or that's the person that filled in that time, like Benny Saint's kind of case was. And yeah, it was kind of cool just to, I think we're slowly like building the personalities of these guys, and every time we get some kind of media, and it's one thing to do it audio, but it's a whole another thing to get some video of them to kind of show the listeners exactly what they look like and how they speak. And yeah, you were kind of in the war zone right at the finish line there.
Yeah, and it was because it was so natural, I think that's why people have really engaged with it as well. Like when I posted it up to the Inside Running Facebook, like it's had some ridiculous amount of views now, hasn't it?
I think it's had like 7,000 or something.
Yeah, that's incredible. It just goes to show that people want access to these runners, and you know, we need to build up their you know, their following, because they're doing amazing things. Like it's a really special time in Australian running, and like Brett Robinson running 28:30 over that course is just phenomenal, you know. And they should have a profile, and they, you know, it's really good to see people getting around them and getting excited, and you know, being able to then relate that to when they go and do a park run on the weekend or go and do a 10K and realise just how ridiculous 28 minutes is for a 10K over a hilly course.
Yeah, I did a bit of stuff with Mario again this morning for his podcast, and kind of talking about, he was really interested in the Australian running scene and kind of how we work over here and the culture of, like, we have a lot of participation kind of focus and kind of fundraising with running focus, but these guys often get forgotten that they're kind of running, you know, Shuey's running 13:04. Like, how amazing kind of is a performance like that, and trying to make it meaningful for the audience out there.
Yeah, well, it's not very well done, is it? But, you know, there are some guys out there who are trying to change that, and that, you know, it's not me talking them up because they're mates of mine or anything, but, you know, Riley and Andy at Tempo Journal, you know, are changing, are changing the face of that, you know, by giving us access to these guys and you know, really profiling them in a way that they deserve. I think it's been great, and I think Tempo's getting a huge following, and they're really putting in the effort. You know, they're traveling, you know, they're going to Falls in winter, they're going overseas to watch some run and document it, and I think that's really helping.
And it's like, it's good looking content too. I think Moose said it the other week on the show, like it makes running look really cool.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess for us, we think it is cool, but you know, for the majority of people, it probably doesn't. So they're certainly lifting that profile of it as well. And running is, I think, having a bit of a resurgence as well. And you see it all over the world that, you know, like the Lost Boys in New York, and you've got all those other groups like in Berlin, like running is a pretty cool culture. And I think it's starting to catch on here a little bit.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, those guys still really respect that elite end as well. Like, it's kind of sometimes with those crews and like influencers on Instagram involved and things like that, it's still about, I don't know, that participation kind of thing. Let's just get people active. But it's like those tempo guys really want to talk about and feature that, yeah, awesome top end performance.
Yeah, I think they're doing a great job of it. I mean, you know, it ties in with what you guys are doing as well, lifting the profile of all these athletes and making them more, you know, household names as well. So I think it's all working well together.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where we, like, our interviewee list is pretty, I don't know if it's sustainable. We've kind of, we're hitting all the biggest names in Australian distance running, but it's probably going to get to a stop at some stage there where we're going to run out of people. So it'll be interesting to see what we do with the interviews. And it's been good trying to dig up some older guys and girls, like Krishna was great the other day, and Mel Norwood, and kind of hearing some of their stories as well. But yeah, it'd be an interesting time when we're, I don't know if we're still going when we do our 200th episode or 150th episode, to see who we're getting onto for the interview then.
Yeah, well, we might find some new people coming out. I mean, there's still heaps of people like that were down here on the weekend that, you know, people don't know. Like, you know, I've never met Harry Summers before or Jordan Guzman, and they're pretty interesting guys, and so they've got pretty interesting stories to tell as well. So I think there's plenty more out there, and hopefully there'll be more and more, especially now you're seeing how successful these guys are being. I think it's only going to create more guys running and more girls running quicker. Like, you look at what was it, that 3K the other week where five or six guys went under 8 minutes. Like,
yeah,
you know,
Box Hill Classic.
Yeah, Box Hill. We haven't seen that for a long time. And the fact that they're getting live streams to all these meets now is really good, and that's improving every time they do it. Like, it was a bit patchy early on, but, you know, it's really improving every time they do it, and people are seeing benefit from it. So hopefully that keeps growing, and we'll see more and more kids, you know, running fast and making it a career for themselves.
Yeah, what I loved about that Vic Miles one, did you watch that on Tuesday night? That
last stream? I missed it.
So no, we were recording, but I went back and had a look at it, and they must have put like the men's A800 and then the females A800 and then the two A miles all together. So you could tune in for 20 minutes, watch all the A races, and stay for the other ones if you wanted to. Otherwise, you could kind of, you know, sometimes when you tune into a live stream and you kind of got a set alarms on your phone because the 5K's on at 7:20 and then the 800's on at 9:10, and you're sitting there with your wife trying to watch some Netflix and she's cracking it because you're changing the channel every 35 minutes to watch 4 minutes worth of run, and then you've got to go back again. That's kind of frustrating as a running fan. Like, I don't get excited about throws or jumps or sprinting.
No.
So it's kind of like that's a whole another sport for me. So I don't want it cutting into my coverage of a 5K race.
Yeah, that's really good that they're doing that, because I understand that, you know, there are people out there who will want to watch those other races. So they're there if they want to tune into them. But the majority of people who are watching are after those sort of events, aren't they? The 8s, the 15s, the miles, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't happen with any other sport, I don't think. Like, you watch a elite swimming meet and it's kind of the A grade final kind of thing. It's not 20 different swimming races, or you turn the AFL on, you're just seeing the high level stuff, you're not seeing the country footy on the TV as well. So it's something different about athletics to that one. But yeah, it's good. What else you noticing about running culture in Australia? Getting excited about these boys stepping up to the marathon.
Oh, I reckon that's the best, isn't it? Like, like to see Jack Rayner having a crack so early while he's still, you know, in, you know, on the up. We haven't seen anybody do that for a long time. I mean, Robbo's still running really well again. He's had a couple of years off, but now he's back running really well. But for Jack to be, like, Jack's still got big improvements to make, but the fact that he's going to have a crack early, I think, is awesome for the sport.
I want to throw a time out there. What are they going to run?
Brad and Jack?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. If it's not hot again, I reckon Brett can go pretty quick, sort of maybe... I reckon he's going to have another crack at sub 210 for sure. I reckon maybe 210.30.
Yeah. And Jack?
Jeez, I don't know what Jack could do.
Depends on what he chooses to, how he races it.
Because it could be anything, couldn't he? I mean, he's run 61 minutes for a half
61.
Now.
61, it's insane.
It seems insane from where he's come from. Like, you know, he wasn't... The year before, he wasn't good enough to go overseas to race, like, you know, according to his coach. And
the year before that, I was racing him at AV. He was back with me running like 66s. Me and him had some good sprint finishes. Imagine how good I feel now. He's put 5 minutes into me over the half.
Oh, it's crazy, and he's such a great fella as well. I'm so happy to see him running so well. He's always been really good. Geez, what could he run? I mean, I don't know if he's done as much training, like marathon specific training, but I guess they're doing a block now, but it'll be whether or not that block gets him ready enough for that last 5 or 6 k's of London.
I'm
off Strava at the
moment. You're fully off.
Totally off. Yeah,
I knew you weren't putting stuff up, but I wasn't sure if you were checking what other people were doing.
Nah, look, I needed to have a break from it, not just for putting my own stuff up there, but just getting caught up with it all. I had to distance myself from running for a little bit because I really wasn't enjoying it, and so I did step away from it for a little bit. And, yeah, I don't really see much on Strava as well. So what's Jack up to? You tell me what he's up to, and then I'll make a call.
Got it open now. He did 6x3K today. And what was he doing those at 9:10 pace, so like 3:04. Kind of pace average. They're doing some like marathon specific stuff, which is, it's good to see. What did he do the other day? 40 minute warm up and then into 2K, 1K, 1K, 2K, 1K, 1K. So still hitting that top end speed, but they just seem to be tiring the legs. He was up at Fernie the other week, I think I saw. And kind of doing 2 hours 20 up there. And I think he kicked down a long run up there the other week, like it's a solid 20 minutes at the end of it. So they're doing a definitely like a strength based kind of program rather than just concentrating on that really top end speed.
Okay, he's going to run. He'll run 209.20.
209. He's going to break 210. First class since Troopy.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
He's got the talent too. It might be a bit early, but it might not. You know, I mean, none of us thought he was going to run 61 and win that Commonwealth half marathon in Wales either. So if he can, and he seems to love the road, doesn't he?
Like what he ran another 61 over in Japan a couple of weeks ago as well. Like it wasn't a fluke when he did that at the Com Games.
Yep, so there you go, Jack. Don't let me down.
Yeah, good luck. What else? What about the female side of things? It's pretty heavy over there at the moment. It's going to be interesting awesome. To see. It's kind of a cool time because, like, you got that knowledge out of Liam that he wasn't going to be focusing on world champs. It'd be interesting to see who goes for world champs. Michael Shelley, haven't heard anything from him. Not sure what he's doing. We kind of know what Liam's doing. And then you've just got this whole bunch of guys, like, just trying to nail a sub-216.
So who we got? Who in that group is running London? Is anybody waiting that long or... Is everybody hitting up Japan first?
Well, first up, who was the other person named to run Com Games? I got to ask this question today. Like, we had Liam and Shelley. Who was our third one that pulled out? I could not remember it for the sake of it.
Yeah, Brad's mate ran with him the other day.
Brad's mate. Oh, yes,
Chris.
Hamer.
Yeah.
That's why I couldn't remember. He's only done a couple of them. He's only done the one, I think, hadn't he, and hit the qualifying time. Yeah.
Oh, he did it easy. Yeah, did it easy and then had that... stress fracture, didn't he?
Yeah, and he's still struggling to get back. That's right, Chris Hamer. Because, I was kind of saying in this other interview, like, we've got Michael Shelley and Liam Adams, who are one and two, like, quite some minutes clear of everybody else, but then we've got 10 guys lining up to try and nab a spot or maybe three spots if they can get under 216 if those other two boys don't want to go. So like Biwa's pretty loaded. Brett Liner from Japan Running News, he put that on his Twitter the other day, the start list. And who was there? Like Tom DeCano, Moose, Brad Milosevic, Reese Edwards.
Yep,
maybe,
he's running well.
Yeah, maybe five. Nick Earl in there as well. Yep. And myself. Like that was the Australian guy. And there's one guy from Ireland, I think Thomas Fraser, who's ran like a 217 as well. So that's going to be, it's almost going to be like a world champs qualifying race with those 216 boys throwing it out there.
Yeah, well, could it end up like a race? I mean, are they brave enough to do it that way? Like who goes? Who makes the pace? I mean, is Thomas probably the quickest out of all them?
Yeah. Brad's 216 and Reese is 216 as well, and Moose 216, obviously. So,
yeah, I reckon Reese will improve on that for sure, as long as he's recovered from that ultra.
Yeah, I fully agree with that as well. And Yugi's in shape. Like, he ran a good run at Zatopek, like low 29, and that World Cross Country trial was pretty impressive, so he must be fit as well. So it could be interesting, and I guess when you go head-to-head with these guys, it the spots really do, positions you finish in the race really do matter. You can't say, oh, it was 20 seconds in front of me, but I was on a hilly course or a windier day or whatever. Like, it's going to be head-to-head.
Jeez, that's going to be an exciting race, isn't it?
It is. Tom's pretty fit. Tom DeCano's killing stuff at the moment.
But, well, they're all fit. Shelley, you think Shelley will go?
I don't know. I, as a guy who works on a running podcast and, like, tries to follow as much running content as possible, no idea. I have no inside knowledge at all. Like, Julian announced that Collis is going to run one.
Yeah, he doesn't mind turning up to tough races, like, you know, for championships. He likes winning stuff, doesn't he? But, you know, like, you think of Delhi, Com Games and all that. Like, he doesn't mind going where it's not going to be fast. He just likes to compete, I think, doesn't he?
100%. He can run, like, a 2:12 on a tough day. Yep. And or 2:14 on a tough day, which is worth a 2:10 or 2:12 and pick up a medal. So yeah, but as I said, haven't heard his name since Commonwealth Games last year. I think that had a bit of a toll on him, like probably some of that backlash off the Callum Hawkins incident.
Yeah, true.
So not sure. I keep asking Brad to get him. Brad knows him pretty well. Maybe I just gotta get a message or an email to him or something just to give us a tiny little statement to know what he's doing. But yeah, let's say he doesn't want to go. He's going to focus on Olympics. And then you've got, Tom, Brad, Moose, Reese, Collis is going to run Hamburg.
Is he?
Yeah. That got announced unofficially on our show this week. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Moose told us about 2 weeks ago. Nah, I can't say anything. Nah, bang, just announces it.
Hamburg. Yeah.
So... And I think with his intention, I'd be assuming, so no knowledge here, that he wants to make a team for the marathon.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Oh, it's really good. I mean, you think, was it 2 years ago? You know, I mean, you ran 2:17 and you're in.
Yeah, and 2 years before that, I think it was Beijing World Champs, and they pretty much said, if anyone can run under 2:18, we're taking you. Like, we just want someone to do it because no one wanted to go and no one else was having a crack at it.
Yeah, there goes the window.
We'll see. It's good, exciting time. It's so good that they've set these standards. Like, setting that 2:19 for a couple of years just gave guys, you know, those kind of semi-elite guys the opportunity to kind of put this time on the board and chase it.
Yeah, it's great. And like it opened it up to a lot of guys who probably weren't thinking of it. Like, you know, somebody like Julian, who probably wasn't thinking about making a world champs team, but, you know, he just kept on improving and then thought, all I want to do is get a qualifier. I don't expect to go to the world champs. I just want to get under that mark. Gets under that mark and now he's, you know, improving, you know, every month with his training. And so he's a realistic chance now, which is just incredible.
Yeah, and there's boys going around Tokyo next weekend as well, like Craig Appleby and Dion and,
Jeez, I mean, Apples could run pretty quick too. Like if you go by his 10 and his half time, and he seems to have been putting a pretty good block together. I read his blogs through Run Culture every week, and he seems to be, you know, training pretty smart.
Yeah, 100%. He's another guy who could, he's a 65 or 64-minute half marathon guy. Like, he's got the talent
runner
there, and he's pretty tough, so... Yeah, he could have the breakthrough as well. So, I don't know, watch his space. Good time to be involved in marathoning in Australia.
Sure is.
What else is going on, mate? What else do we have on our list to talk about? I don't have that open at the moment.
Let me you're asking me about books, but still waiting. The books, well, you said you were going to send me a couple of them. I'm still waiting for those in the post.
Which one was I going to mail you? I'm going to write it down now and close the paper.
I can't even remember. I've ordered a couple through the library, but they must be pretty popular because I'm still waiting for them to turn up. So in between, I've just been reading a lot of fiction, to be honest, because I knew I was coming. I think I got all worn out from uni reading last year because it was, you know, so content heavy in your first year of teaching that I think I got over all the facts and stuff like that, and so I've just been reading light stuff of late.
Yeah, like fiction stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, just easy reads. But I'm sort of back into the books now and studying some really interesting subjects this term, like design and technology. But it's sort of the subject's not really about technology as you think it, as in like, you know, phones and computers and things like that. It's about how we've adapted over the years and, you know, why we use things and how we use them, and getting kids more creative at a younger age, because apparently design technology just hasn't been taught until high school up until now, and they're sort of bringing it into the primary school now to create, you know, more creative minds and get people thinking a little bit differently as well. So it looks like there's going to be some interesting concepts around that, and then another subject's about positive learning environment, so that's really interesting, about the psychology of how you set up your classrooms and how to react with different students. So yeah, there's some really interesting content. So that's what I'll be reading for the next couple of months.
Yeah, right. That's that whole environment stuff is huge, I think. And you track the technology and, you know, what devices do the kids have in the classroom and what websites they're allowed onto and all that kind of social media stuff. It can create a very interesting environment if you're trying to do some teaching in there.
Yep. What about your year? I mean, what's your year going to look like now, and how do you think you'll adjust to not working full time? Do you think that's going to be a positive?
Yeah, it's a good positive. I think it kind of needed to happen. I was kind of doing six things okay and nothing well, just trying to fit it in. And people, like, probably haven't explained it well on Inside Running, but with the podcast, like the work that we put into the podcast, and I do the production and the social media and all that kind of stuff around it, it kind of adds up pretty quick. So it kind of takes a few hours to nail all that back end stuff every week and organizing guests. And even when you do an interview, like, you got to put in a good amount of time researching people and just digging into their backstory so you know what to talk about. Otherwise you come across a bit vague sometimes. So the podcast work keeps me busy for a bit of time. The coaching's going really well. We've run to PB, like with Zaka and Mattress and Gemma. We're kind of really enjoying kind of not so much elite end stuff, like a couple of guys running close to 2:30 for the marathon, and we've found a lot of people who have just wanted to break like 20 minutes for 5K, for example.
I've seen those stories. I mean, that must be such a thrill for you guys as a coaching team to be, you know, because there's more of those people out there than there are sub 2:30 guys.
It's crazy good. It's like Jason and Josh, two guys I coach from not far from Echuca. Like, I remember they signed up together. We're both going to do the same training, wanted to break 20 minutes in, like, I think it was Feb last year. And sometimes you forget because you just get used to their progression and you have to flick back on their Strava and stuff. And yeah, like, now they're smashing that, like, smash 20 minutes, come to Echuca for parkrun, paced them through. And now, like, they went to Shepparton at the Shep Running Festival and broke 40 minutes Jason actually broke 39 minutes. And then you kind of got to remember that these were guys that just wanted to do that for 5K, and now they're doing it easily for 10. And kind of then you can see they get focused on half marathon and have a good run there. And realistically, like, these guys stick to it. They'll be kind of chasing the sub-3-hour marathon, not far down the track. And these were people who just wanted to break 20 minutes for 5K. And I get massive kicks out of, that and kind of anywhere between kind of, it's good for people who want to break 3 hours. I like people ticking that box as well. And a couple of people who kind of want to smash 3 hours, like want to run 2:48 or 2:47 and kind of put in that dedication and that focus. And there, it's really rewarding working with them as well. So coaching's kind of taking up a day's worth of work as well, trying to make it, like, still, you know, kind of, I think maybe, Probably could take on two more people. Like, I don't want to take on too many people because then it just gets away from that personalised kind of stuff. And I like knowing what's happening in people's lives and keeping it really personalised and not getting people confused or anything like that. So probably
yeah, can't. You don't want it to become just like a spreadsheet that you just pop their name in and send off. And I think that's why people are probably really getting around it as well, because they have that personal touch, you know, and they've got, I mean, it's a great little crew. It's funny, I sent a message to Mattress and Gemma today because there was a Facebook memory popped up today of a post that I'd made, and it's a photo of Mattress and I running just before the finish of Run the Bridge, and that last 10K race that I did in 2017.
And, was Mattress there that year?
Yeah. He and I finished within a couple of seconds of each other.
Yeah,
and
right.
So it's a great photo of us from behind, like running to the finish, and I send that to him because he's had so many, or they both have had so many problems and illness and injury and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I was saying, mate, that was 2 years ago, and I hope that, you know, one day we can do that again. And like are they married?
No, not married. No. I think Gemma wishes they were, but yeah.
His partner Gemma's been amazing. Like, I don't know Gemma, but she was messaging me all the time about my injuries, and because she had so many issues and problems as well. And so we were bouncing off each other for ages. So it's great to see her back running and sessioning and running so well, because she's a great talent, obviously just loves the sport as well. And so she's been a really great support, even though I don't know her. And I've had other great people, like it's good to see Mark DeCampo. He was always sending me messages. Another guy I don't know.
Yeah.
And he's back running again now, and that's awesome. And then, you know, like Ben Pearson from your hometown, I met him for the first time in Lonnie the other week, because he's down helping his in-laws with a great vineyard that they've got in the north of Tassie. And he's actually moving down here in a couple of weeks to live for a few months and work on the vineyard and do a vintage. And, you know, it's just that's what's great about the community, you know, that, you know, I've never met him before, but he was sending me wine. And then by the time I did meet up with him, you know, it was like we're old mates.
Yeah, that's a cool world like that.
It is really good. And it's good to see, like, young people taking a risk like that and going, rightio, well, I'm just going to stop my job and move into state for a while and, you know, chase something I'm more passionate about. I mean, he's an electrician by trade, and now he's down making beautiful wine and really loving it. You can see when he was at the stall at the festival that he just loves talking about it and so passionate. It's good to take those risks sometimes. Sorry, we've gone off on a tangent there, but
no, mate, this is what we do. Yeah, it's funny you bring up Gemma though, because she's a brilliant coach and communicator. Like Carly, I've been writing her program for years, and it does my head in because she always questions me, like, why am I doing this session and why am I doing that? And I'm just like, it's just probably too hard to be somebody's husband and their running coach at the same time. So I said, look,
my wife never listens to me.
Exactly. Like, I could say it all perfect and she'd still doubt it, or would still have arguments about it and stuff like that. So I just said to her, look, I'll pay for you. You can sign up with Gemma. And Gemma's like, every run, she's like shooting her an email, and communication was awesome. And I said to Carly, I'm like, she is going over and beyond with this. She is a brilliant coach and, really caring kind of nature and stuff. And coming off those injuries, she'll be stronger and stuff as well. So, it's been good to kind of pursue that. Like, I probably found when I was just doing it on the side by myself, it was a bit rushed and a bit kind of like Google Docs kind of spreadsheet kind of stuff and not sure who's paid and checking bank statements and things like that. Whereas now, under this umbrella of Run to PB, it's just a lot more professional. Like Zach is great with the social media and linking with a couple of partners who kind of give discounts for our members and little things like that. Like, just probably hard to get the initiative to do that by yourself, but when you're a group, and it's good because sometimes someone will sign up and we'll kind of, they won't nominate a coach, and we'll kind of have a look at their PBs and think about who would fit them best and what they want to achieve and who's got the life experience and the coaching experience to make that happen. So instead of having like one coach, they really get four at the moment, because we kind of will bounce ideas off each other and communicate that way, which is fun. So that's kind of, I put stuff in like days of the week at the moment. So like podcast works one day a week.
Yep.
Coaching stuff's one day a week. I've been doing like CRT teaching, which I'm absolutely loving. So like schools will ring me, and I've only told one school that I'm available for work, so I didn't want to tell 10 schools and then you got to say no to 9 and then they never call you again. So this one school in Bendigo I've told, and it's like the best bits of teaching. You get to walk in at 8:30, teach the kids for 5 hours and go home. Like, there's no paperwork, There's no like parentage interviews. There's no going away on school camps. There's no writing reports. It's just having fun with the kids and trying to have an impact.
This is so interesting. So I caught up with a mate who's a really dedicated teacher, and he was saying that he thinks that's what I should do when I qualify, because I'm not looking for a full-time job because it just won't suit our life, you know. Yeah. And we don't need it. I'm not doing it because we need heaps of cash, you know. Lindsay earns enough to keep us comfortable, and it's more about keeping me, functioning as a human, you know, being interested and being challenged and that kind of stuff. And he was saying, like, he's got a mate who does it and just loves it. Has this one school. She's pretty much a permanent relief teacher for one school. So she gets gets to know all the kids, knows all the policies of the school, knows the teachers. So when she goes into a class, it's not like she's a regular relief teacher and the kids can just do whatever they want with her because they know they're not going to see her again. They know that she's like a regular teacher that turns up occasionally. She nominates when she wants to work, works a few days a week, and then, you know, it's just seems like a really great lifestyle. You still get to do all the great stuff about teaching, but yeah. You don't have some of the downfalls.
Yeah, don't have the admin. It's all the practical admin, stuff. Yeah, it's been good. And you go, like, I'm working tomorrow, like, just trying to do 1 or 2 days a week. I probably don't want to take any more on because then I'll get back into that busy kind of lifestyle that I'm not really chasing at the moment and get that balance out of whack again. But yeah, I'm kind of I'm working tomorrow, which is Friday, recording this on a Thursday, and kind of excited about, okay, this is good. I get to work tomorrow and I'll have some fun. And well, yeah, the kids are really super well behaved at this school and kind of building that rapport now, which is good. So that's kind of my other 2 days a week. And this little Airbnb property that we've got, that's keeping me pretty busy as well. It's kind of getting booked 5 or 6 nights a week at the moment. So I'm also a part-time cleaner, cleaning sheets and vacuuming floors and all that kind of stuff. And just even the admin around messaging people, checking details and making sure the dates are lined up perfectly on the calendar and all those kind of things. So it sounds like on the surface that I'm having this running year, but I'm probably just working 40 hours a week instead of, I could have been working 80 hours a week with the teaching load and doing all this stuff at 9 p.m. at night kind of thing. So it's good to do it.
But that's probably better than being a full-time athlete. I just don't think that would suit you, your personality. Yeah. You need to be busy, and because otherwise you would just obsess about your running. You'd spend all day, every day on Strava and looking at your splits and your data and all that kind of stuff. So, balance for you.
Running hasn't changed. Like, it's not like I'm doing more running either. Like, I feel really good with this marathon build-up that it's kind of like I'm 2.5 weeks from a marathon. It feels like I'm just kind of doing general training. Like, I'm not that tired guy that's having to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning anymore. Like, I can still do the same amount of running, but I'm just getting more sleep and not having that probably adrenaline firing throughout the day, knocking over a million jobs.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a weird one. But yeah, so well, 3 weeks in, I think it's because I'll probably have to give it to, like, work will end up calling me because I'm just taking a year's leave. So they'll give me a ring in October or September or something and say, you're coming back. And if I can keep nailing this stuff, it will be a no.
Yeah, wow.
Interesting. Yeah, but it's good. It's kind of, yeah, I think I've spoken to you before that, like, actually, I first heard it when I was at your place in January last year after the Cadbury Half Marathon. Yeah, and I was jogging around. You were at work one of those days afterwards, and I was listening to Tim Ferriss interview someone. I can't remember who it was, but it was kind of like giving your life a score out of 10. Have I spoken to you about this before?
Yeah.
And, like, mine was a 7, and I'm just like, you can't use – well, the rule is that you can't use the number 7. So it goes down to 6 and you make some changes because 6 out of 10 is not good enough. Or it goes up to 8 and you've got to be content with it. So, yeah, it's an interesting kind of thing to do. Like, you do a bit of a pros and cons list and work it out.
Well, I think you're going to find it's going to be much closer or much higher after this year, after having... Yeah, so much quality. How's Carly going with it all?
Yeah, she's going good. It's kind of like that. And because a lot of my work is... I'm trying to get better at it. I wasn't great at it at the start because I'd still... work because it's kind of flexible stuff. Like, it's someone, your coach sends you an email at 6 o'clock at night, so you open it and then you write back straight away. Whereas that's like the 4 hours I have with her when she gets home from work, and before we kind of go to bed. So I've kind of got I've got better at it now that I write programs and I do podcast work between that kind of 9 and 4 o'clock while she's at work as well, rather than doing it like I used to, like after I'd come home from work or after I've been for a run. So that's taken a bit of a while to work out, but yeah, she's good, like, because I'm doing so much stuff around the house as well, like the dishwasher's always empty and meals are cooked and the lawns are always mowed, and I'm like happier, so I'm not walking around like a chook with its head cut off knocking stuff over. It's all kind of done before the time she gets home.
Yeah, it's exactly the same as it is here. Like, and you know, there's nothing wrong with living your life like that, just because it doesn't, you know, just because it's not how it used to be 10 years ago, or how it's considered for a man or anybody to be, you know, working Monday to Friday and things like that. Like, I'm quite comfortable in my role. I mean, Lindsay's incredibly intelligent and very hardworking and has done a lot of work to get where she is, and you know, I'm quite happy to support her in that. And you know, it's just a really good balance, and if you can find that balance, your life's going to be a lot happier, and there's no problems with being happy, I don't think.
Nah, none at all. And I think sometimes we get caught up in this, like, consumerism and buying stuff and chasing the next bigger house, and I think we've spoken about all this stuff before, but it's good just putting all that aside and just concentrating on the things that matter, and living a good life while we're here.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, awesome, mate. What about podcasts? You been listening to any decent podcasts?
Yeah, look, I sort of oscillate between some very similar ones. Oh, look out, I've just had a message from Mattress, actually. There we go.
Yeah.
Let's do it again. Yeah, I'll tell him. I oscillate between, like, I go in and out of Rich Roll. Sometimes I just have a bit too much of Rich Roll, but he does have some pretty incredible guests, and sometimes that's been awesome. I love that running podcast that that Ross Murray's doing. Like, I think he's just a legend. Was he on Tell Me Your Tales or on Inside Running?
He's on Inside Running, yeah. I interviewed him, and I had like an hour and 20 minutes. He's such a pisser. Have you listened to this week's episode from them?
Yeah, the Rooney one.
No, I haven't listened to it yet. I'm listening to it on the afternoon, 90 minutes. So I'm
it's another ripper, because the guests that they get on are like incredible athletes, but they're all so funny. Like, they all get along so well, and they have such great banter, and they gets really interesting. Like, some of it's really stupid, but some of it's really insightful as well. And it's great seeing their journeys. Like, for Colin and Ross, you know, both, you know, elite, world class athletes are now trying to run park runs and stuff like that. And you know, he calls himself Fat Boy Slim, Colin does, because he got out to 90-odd kilos. And I think, what was it? He had to
16:30 or something like that.
He had to run a park run under 16:30 and lose all this weight. Otherwise, he had to get all 12 of his mates tattooed on his body or something like that. You know, so a pretty good motivation to get fit again. So it's really interesting watching him balance that out. And, yeah, I love that. I listened to a little bit of Mario stuff. Listen to Colleen Quigley during the week. That was really good. I still love Freakonomics. It's still one of my favorite. They just really delve into some really interesting topics that you just don't really think about, and how corrupt the world is, pretty much. That's good. Yeah. And I still love Lance. Like, I know he's not popular, but man, I love listening to his chats. Like, he's a pretty funny dude, and he gets some really cool people on. Like, I listen to that the rock climber, Alex. Is it Alex?
Have you seen that doco?
Oh, no, it's playing at the State Cinema. I've just found out yesterday. It's playing down here. It'd be incredible to watch. What's it called? Free Solo?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, just ridiculous. We were in Yosemite a year or two ago, and to think that you climb anything out there without any ropes or anything is crazy. But to climb El Capitan, I think?
I actually am not sure. I've just, you know, one of those things that you kind of, it comes up and then you see it once, and then it comes up 2 weeks later, and then you hear someone talking about it on a podcast, and like every time you hear it, it's from credible sources, and it's like, I'm at that stage now where I'm like, I've got to figure out how to watch this because I've heard it's brilliant.
So they were saying that you really need to watch it on the big screen if you can, because, I mean, it's such a beautiful place. But, he's right, El Capitan. So El Capitan is 900 metre vertical rock face, and he climbs it. He attempts to climb it with nothing, just his hands.
Yeah, right.
No ropes or anything. Like, it's incredible. I've just been watching, when I'm on my bike doing my cross training, I often put docos and things on. I watched one yesterday by the North Face about the old the old climbers and mountaineers from back in the 70s and 80s who used to climb all the rocks up there, and like they used to do them in like a week or something like that with all the ropes and things like that, and that was even like death defying then, and now this dude's doing it with nothing.
Yeah, right. It's on it. It's not out yet, but it's on at cinemas and stuff. IMAX.
Yeah, it's only at cinemas.
IMAX.
That's what Lance said to do. Like, he said he was absolutely petrified watching it. Like, he felt physically sick watching the guy do it. But
I think Tom from Marathon Talk said the same thing. Like, you know, he survives because there's a movie about it. But you got to look away when it's happening.
Yeah, so that's what I've been listening to. Podcast and Inside Running, of course. I listen to that every week. I still love that. I did start listening to some of Stephen Scullion's stuff after, but man, that's heavy. That's heavy going. Like, he's a different dude, and it's really interesting. He's a very, very confident man, and it's interesting. It's sort of following him. It's just him talking into an iPhone pretty much for like 20 minutes and every day, and documenting. He's trying to qualify for Tokyo 2020 in the marathon, I think. I don't know if you've listened to him at all.
I have. I think because they all go for like 15 minutes kind of thing, aren't a great help for me because I need the hour ones or the 90-minute ones to get me through my long runs and stuff like that. And yeah, you've described it really well. Like, he's opening voice memos on his phone and hitting record and then just hitting upload. Like, it's pretty raw stuff. So I'd listened to a few of those before he was on Ross Murray's podcast, and yeah, kind of hats off to him for being so honest and raw and just putting it out there. Like, it's an interesting interesting lifestyle that he lives, and he's kind of being super honest with why he's chasing the goals, and yeah, hopefully he can. I think his run at Houston was pretty impressive. I think he'd be pretty close to making that Olympic team for Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ultra competitive over there, but he delves into some pretty interesting things, and he said he's very honest about, like, he had an eating disorder, which is, geez, it's sounding like it's quite common, isn't it? But you just wonder how much of that is prevalent. I mean, I know, like, with Dave McNeil and I, like, we were both pretty little and skinny, but that's just how we were. It wasn't because we were denying it, ourselves of any food or anything like that, but it certainly sounds like it can be something at that elite level that you see other guys and see what they weigh and what they're doing. You think, well, if I'm 3 or 4 kilos lighter, then maybe I'll be able to do that. But it doesn't work like that at all. You've still got to be strong, and you've still got to put fuel in the fire in order to maintain that equilibrium and that status quo in the body. So
yeah, just keep shoveling it in. It's the reverse problem that 99% of the population has.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that was one other thing that I actually got scales because I was so worried, because they told me, that was one of the things when I was coming back, the sports doctor and physio said I wasn't allowed to get below probably 64, 65 kilos.
Yeah.
And so I actually have to weigh myself every day now, and I record it on Garmin to track it, because once I start exercising like I am now, like, I'm probably doing 12 to 14 sessions a week, even though none of them are super long, they all sort of add up. And if I have a day where I don't feel right, like you say, if it's a gym day for an hour and then it's a run day and I do 30 minutes and then I'll probably do half hour on the spin bike to cool down, if I don't feel well that day, then I can lose a kilo and a half in a day or two. And so I just maintain that now by getting on the scales every day for the opposite reason. I'm trying not to lose weight. So
yeah, especially when it's hot as well and you're dripping in sweat. Like, it's been a killer summer up here, and it's just been so hard to manage that weight to keep it up.
Yeah.
Did you have bloods and stuff done? Like, did you get testosterone done for when you were skinny?
Everything was good. It was all fine.
See, mine drops if my weight drops. That's the first like blood indication that we can tell.
Actually, mine wasn't great the first time around. Actually, yeah, it wasn't particularly great, but it was nothing like what you had. Like, yours was really low, so mine wasn't too bad. All I have to do now is supplement calcium and vitamin D, and so I take that a couple of times a day. But that was more for my bone health. And so I just keep an eye on that now. Every year or so, I think I have to have a bone density check, and so I had one of those in December, and everything had improved. So
that's good, because I was going to ask you that question: can it improve, or once your bones are like that? Because when Dave McNeil said about his kind of early onset osteoporosis, I wasn't sure if you can pull that back once it gets to that stage.
Yes and no. So when I went and saw an endocrinologist as part of my recovery, and he was pretty much looking at it from a point of view, okay, you've got a 39-year-old male who has pretty much osteopenia, which is just a step down from osteoporosis, and that was throughout my spine and hips. And he was looking at it from the fact that, well, because all the studies have been done on like 60 to 70-year-old women. You know, they're not looking at young men or athletes. So the information that he got wasn't particularly great. He was just like, oh, well, you could take this or you could not take this and it won't really matter, but you pretty much, that's what it's going to be like. Whereas my sports doctor and my GP, who's amazing, actually looked into it a lot more and said, yours is totally reversible because this is something that happened. It's not something that's just occurred. It's just something that you've done to yourself. And so I had Prolia, which is a bisphosphonate. I had two courses of that. And most people, the endocrinologist didn't want me to take it because once you start taking it, you're meant to keep taking it for years because if you stop taking it, then everything reverses. But once again, he was looking at it from the point of view of a 7-year-old woman with osteoporosis, whereas mine actually came about because I wasn't getting enough fuel in my body and my body, instead of, you know, to maintain everything, it just kept leaching out of my bones. And so that's how I got it. And so we thought we could get away with only doing it twice. And so we did it twice and then had a bone density check and everything's improved. So
yeah, awesome.
Yeah, so it is totally reversible, but you've just got to be really careful. And that's what I did. That's why I had to put on so much weight. And that's why I had to, you know, pretty much stop what I was doing for a while. But yeah, now the seesaw's tipped back in the right direction. I can sort of live pretty normally now, as long as I, you know, don't get too light. And the only time I'll be allowed to drop weight again is if I'm back into, you know, if I actually manage to get back to racing, I'll be allowed to periodize once or twice a year where I do drop weight a little bit, you know, for a peak race. But the majority of the year I need to be heavier, just to protect everything and to stay a bit healthier. Whereas last time around, like Dave said, I was 59 or 60 kilos for 12 months of the year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's no wriggle room there. When things go bad, when you're on a knife edge like that, you get sick really quick and, you know, you're liable to, you know, break bones and all that kind of stuff. While you're in really good shape and fit, but as soon as you push that 1% further, then you put yourself in danger. So
yeah, stress isn't that.
Yeah, being light's not everything. You know, no. I should still be able to run pretty well. I'll just be a bit heavier, but I'll hopefully be a bit stronger this time around.
Stronger's better than being light, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I get great sort of, well, not satisfaction, but looking at somebody like Dion, who's just an absolute animal, and like he's more like, he's not a stereotypical runner at all, but look what he can do. And, you know, he's got great range now from 5K all the way up to ultras, and he can maintain it by, you know, having a really healthy physique and being, you know, a lot bigger than us regular runners, and he can still outrun most people. So yeah, there's certainly something to take from that.
Yeah, what about, I know you're not a big fan, I'm not sure if you're still not a big fan, you're listening to Joe Rogan lately, Colin O'Brady on there was the guy that pulled the sleigh across Antarctica. He was brilliant, you'd love that one.
I knew you were going to ask me about Joe Rogan. Yeah, I just don't like the dude. I have listened to a couple of his which are good, but I mean, he and I differ on so many things that, you know, I find a little bit hard to listen to him. What's the guy's name?
Colin O'Brady. He was the guy who pulled the sleigh across Antarctica. He's worth a listen to.
All right, I'll add it into the list.
Give it a go on that one. Before we talk again, I'll get your thoughts on it next time.
Right, yeah. It's loaded up.
Let the listeners know if I've converted you back over to Joe Rogan's side. Yeah. Hi, mate. Good. Well, that's over an hour. I think I've got to knock this 90 minutes out. What's planned for you for this afternoon?
I'll take Maggie to the park now for a bit of a walk and a run, and then I'll do a little bit more study before Lindsay gets home, and then get on with dinner prep, and that'll be it. I try to have all that sort of stuff done and organised before she gets home, so once I'm home it's all fairly relaxed. So yeah, I might hop on the bike, I think, spin the legs out. I tend to do that on those running days, just for 30 or 40 minutes, nothing hard, just keep the heart rate really low, but it tends to be like a little bit of like a recovery massage for me.
Yeah, active recovery, sounds good. Yep. Beautiful, mate. Well, thanks for giving up some more time for the Tell Me Your Tales podcast.
Yeah, great to have it back.
I was about to say inside running there. I've got, I'm interviewing Aaron Pulford. This is the third podcast, I'm doing three podcasts today. It's going to be a big day. I did Mara this morning, you the middle of the day, and then Aaron Polford this afternoon from Kenya. So I think I've been to America, Tasmania, and Kenya for the day, which should be a bit of fun.
Oh, brilliant.
Looking good. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Brady.
See ya.
Talk soon. See ya.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.